We're going to take a look at what it means to be a man.
To help launch a new literary nonprofit called Narrative 4, Esquire magazine asked 80 of the world's greatest writers to contribute a story about what manhood means.
The contributors include Salman Rushdie, Terry Tempest Williams, and Jeff Dyer, to name a handful, and they take a hard look at the ins and outs and the ups and downs of masculinity today.
Our next guest curated the work called The Book of Men and is a co-founder of the group Narrative 4. Colin McCann is the National Book Award-winning author of Let the Great World Spin. His most recent book is Transatlantic. Colin, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Before we get to these stories, talk about Narrative 4. What's the goal of the organization? What are you trying to do there?
We set up Narrative 4 about a year ago. And basically what we're trying to do is take kids from all over the world, say from Belfast, from Haifa, from Detroit, from Chicago, from Madison, from New York, wherever, New Orleans, and we bring them together to exchange one another's stories, not just to tell one another's stories, but to literally step into one another's shoes. We call it radical empathy. And what happens is that you get these kids from all over who take responsibility for somebody else's life. And we find that it's an incredible way to learn to tell somebody else's story and give your own story to another person in order for them to tell it back. And it has extraordinary implications for for empathy, for decency, for community. And so we're hoping to set up this we're doing a lot of work between Chicago and Limerick, also between Chicago and Newtown, Connecticut, the kids in Newtown, Connecticut who experienced that terrible massacre last December, are exchanging stories with kids from the south side of Chicago who sort of see violence on an everyday basis. And they learn then to what it means to be somebody else, and that I suppose you'd say that the world has big lungs. It's a really, it's a great organization, I think.
Well, for this book, How to Be a Man, you compiled 80 stories, you curated these, and these are all about manhood. Why do you think men need something like this?
Well, to be totally honest with you, we were helped out by Esquire magazine, and the issue in which we were going to publish the essays was the Father's Day issue. And they said, you know, it'd be great if we could get these writers talking about what it means to be a man. But then it started to trill sort of deeper into the notions of, you know, who these kids are. And you know, like if you have kids, say, from a working class area of Limerick, trying to figure out what it means to be a man, so much of what supposedly a man is about can be about violence and can be about loss and can be about things being taken away. And we're much more interested in, you know, the notion that how to be a man is deeper and more complex than all of that. I should tell you that we are definitely going to work on a version called How to Be a Woman.
So it's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of things out there that tell us how to be men, in this case, and women for the sequel. TV ads, our peer group. Why? This is mainly fiction. Why fiction as a road to learning about manhood, about masculinity?
Well, that's a great question, because the thing is that fiction is a tool in which can embrace all sorts of contradictions. It can get at the notion of manhood allegorically. It can get at the notion of manhood with sort of suggestions. And it can hold complicated notions at the same time, different notions at the same time. So I think fiction has a strength and a complexity that nonfiction doesn't necessarily have. I mean, nonfiction, you hammer in the nail and you hit the nail on the head. With fiction, you tend to groove the wood so that it all fits together. It's a different process. It's a more suggestive and possibly a more generous process than pure nonfiction.
Now, one that you're particularly interested in is by the actor Gabriel Byrne. I think you said it was his first published work. What can you tell us about that piece?
this was so much fun. So we have all sorts of people from all over the world, writers from all over the world who are interested in narrative four. I mean, we have Salman Rushdie, as you said. We have Mona Simpson, Terry Tempest Williams, Ian McEwan, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. We have, and people from all backgrounds. And I'm friends with Gabriel Byrne, who your listeners will know. It was in The Usual Suspects, and he sends many a heart a fluttering with his appearances in treatment. And I was talking to Gabriel. He's a great writer. He's a really great writer. And I said, Gabriel, would you do a story for the anthology? And he has written lots of nonfiction before, but he'd never written fiction or a short story. And so he came along and he wrote this wonderful, evocative piece about Cold War Ireland and growing up in Dublin and what it meant to be a man when the character in the story is a young boy who's looking in a shop window at the images of Khrushchev and Kennedy flickering on the screen.
Do you want to read us a little bit?
Sure, I can read the whole thing if you want to, because
it's pretty short.
It really is very short and very, it's kind of like a poem.
Excellent.
So this is How to Be a Man by Gabriel Byrne. In the shop window, Khrushchev and Kennedy flickered, white and black, on a 17-inch pie television screen. It was yours for 10 shillings and 6 pence per week on the Never Never Misses. It was an electrical shop and a gentleman's outfitters, carnies, all windows, no walls. The leaders of the world sat right there, voiceless to me, behind the glass, among sports coats and hoovers and transistor radios. And Ned, the postman, who read lips on account of his eldest being deaf, shuffled up beside me, smelling of woodbine. The rain came down, no surprise. Ned narrated to me a fearful language never heard before, death and hell, rivers on fire, hills of molten lava snaking along the streets. We will bury you. The flesh was falling from the bones of those I loved, and all the mountain flowers were crushed and broken. All the next day, the rain kept falling, falling, and out over the fields, my grandfather and I tramped to bring home, in their sodden innocence, the beasts of the field for milking. The dark angels screeched for worms in the new-turned earth, and I, yesterday a boy, made man now by knowledge that presently all must end forever, stood beneath the drip-dropping branches while my grandfather drew the smoke of his cigarette deep down into himself and let it out. And for a moment, the smoke was one with the breath of cattle. And in that moment, young and old were speaking in an ancient silence, understanding nothing, everything, and all the world was made eternal.
That's Colin McCann reading from the Book of Men. That's Gabriel Byrne's contribution. Oh, what was that line? Yesterday a boy made man now by knowledge that presently all must end forever. An interesting thought. Can you expand upon that? What do you make of that as part of what it means to be a man?
Well, I think what Gabe was talking about is that moment when you realize the world is beyond the confines of your that little town or village that you grew up in. You're standing there, you're outside the television shop, and then suddenly you see Khrushchev and you see Kennedy and you hear all of the these things are voiceless to him. But he's learning that the world is getting big.
Well, it seems like a sense of burden and maybe even responsibility settling in on you there too.
That's right. I can feel that responsibility. That suddenly the world is growing for him. Suddenly the world is getting bigger. And for someone like Gabriel, that's opening up. He opens up as an actor all the time, obviously. But here he is sort of in his own voice and in his own body. It's a hard thing to write a piece of fiction like that, particularly one that's as beautiful as that.
Do you think, you know, that this book might speak to, well, I guess to everybody, but I guess particularly to men right now, because, you know, there's been a lot written about how there aren't the old rituals anymore. They're kind of breaking down, and you don't really know when you become a man or a grown up anymore. And maybe what we just have is stories to tell us that everyone has something else, and maybe yours is just as valid.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the world is... I've always said that the greatest democracy that we have is the ability to tell our stories. It goes across borders, it goes across boundaries, all sorts of genders, all sorts of issues. The stories are big, and lots of things can happen to us in our lives, and we can have things taken away from us. We can have our houses taken away from us. We can have our cars taken away from us. We can have loved ones taken away from us. We can even have countries taken away from us. But we can never, ever, ever have our stories taken away from us. That, to me, is profound. And I think that young men in particular need to know that they are valuable and that their stories are valuable. Because so much of what culture is about today is like dismissing, you know, whole swaths of the population by pretending that they don't matter. And what we're saying with Narrative 4, and also what we're hopefully saying with the Book of Men, is that, no, hold on a second here. No, you matter, and what you have to say matters. And you can legislate the world, and you can operate in it and change it, hopefully.
We're speaking right now with Colin McCann. He's the curator of the collection The Book of Men and the author of the book Transatlantic.
We'd like to hear your thoughts. Do you have a story about what manhood means to you? Do you think it's changed in your lifetime? Is there a book or a novel or a story you've read that tells us something about what it means to be a man? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email, talk@WPR.org.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks, Kristen. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. This is Central Time.
We're speaking with Colin McCann right now. He's a contributing editor at Esquire, co-founder of Narrative 4. And we're talking about a recently curated work of 80 stories about manhood. It's called The Book of Men.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there an author, a book, a story that affects what you think of manhood, of being a man? You can call if you're a man or a woman, by the way. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. It's 800-642-1234, or share on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to the phones now. We have Michael with us in Madison. Michael, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, good. Do you have a thought to share with us?
Yeah, so really what comes to my mind is the kind of really masculine way of thinking that men, can't really show emotion. You know, I've read Hemingway comes to mind, that war brazen man who can't show emotion. You know, that sort of seems to be a value in our culture today. That's what I feel.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Michael. So that's one of many fictional elements, Colin, inspirations of manhood. What do you make of what he had to say?
Yeah, I think he's right, and I think it's part of our problem. The difficulty that so many of us have in learning to express our emotions or our deepest, dark down feelings. If we can get to them, and if we can be honest with ourselves, and then possibly learn to be more honest with each other, I do think that we could be on a path to deeper empathy. And really, I mean, empathy is a key word here. It's what we need so much more of. And I think, personally, that the biggest political failure that we have nowadays is a failure of empathy, a failure to understand what it means to be poor, a failure to understand what it means to be, in another country or of another religion or of another, viewpoint. If we could sort of be more muscular with our empathy, then I think we'd be in a far, far better place. And of course, Barack Obama has talked about this in his own work, in his own writing, in relation to empathy. But I do think that if we had more ability to embrace our emotions, we'd probably be better off.
It's so interesting to hear you say. I mean, we can't legislate empathy. It's something you have to feel. And, you know, I guess fiction and writing in general is one way to feel things.
Exactly. You cannot legislate it whatsoever. But we have to stand up and say, you know, this is my story. Please, you know, listen to me. And I will tell your story. I will respect you. I have to tell you, when we get these kids together, we got kids together from Chicago public schools, because a lot of our test work is going on in Chicago, and they started to tell one another stories. The world was immediately changed for them, and they went out of there better citizens, more prepared to deal with the world around them, more prepared to tell the truth about, you know, themselves. And we've also begun it with these kids in Limerick, as I said earlier. And eventually we will have kids from, you know, from Haifa in from Israel, you know, exchanging with kids from New Orleans. And if we can do that sort of thing, we begin to look at each other in a more powerful way and own one another's stories, I think, you know, we'll change the world in little but significant ways.
All right, we've got another caller, David, with us in Madison. David, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. Great, great, great discussion. I stumbled into this topic, and I just caught the tail end of your show, but I stumbled into this topic as a man in nursing. Growing up, I didn't have a whole lot of male men in nursing as role models or anything, but I started seeing how I was treated differently by patients and colleagues when they perceived me as a physician first, but then changed. And when I told them that I'm a man in nursing, the respect and things like that changed literally in an instant. But as I just started to research that topic and look into matters on my own, it seemed like bullying was something that was a common factor in how men develop, and just that constant posturing of proving one's manhood. So when I heard the topic today, I always kind of cringe and think, all right, are we going to go with a man-up approach, be more masculine, be more tough, hide your emotions? But to hear your guests say, no, let's celebrate empathy amongst men, and let's embrace that, let's welcome it, just warms my heart, because I truly don't think men can really get to their fullest potential without getting into those gray parts of life.
Gotcha. Thanks, David. I want to get a response from Colm. He worried that empathy is bullied out of men or postured out of men. What do you make of that?
Well, I think what David had to say is really, really, really profound and interesting to me. Because what happens is so much of this comes down to language, and the difference between the language of calling somebody a nurse and a physician. You know, both are there saving lives, but we have these sort of hijacked perceptions in relation to one word, and then we have other perceptions in relation to the other. And really what we have to be doing is to try and break down those barriers, and this all comes down to language, which is at the root of everything, and it's how we tell our stories and how we tell other people's stories. And that's to me, you know, one of the things that we absolutely must work on if we're going to keep progressing. You know, I think everybody would agree that we want the world to keep progressing. We'd like it to be a nicer place to live in, a better place to live in, a better sort of planet. Well, we have to keep, you know, examining issues of language.
Well, thank you to David for that call, and let's go next to William in Ellsworth. Hi, William.
Hi there. My grandfather taught me that I always kind of worried about my self-image, that I wasn't, you know, as strong as the other boys. You know, I always worked on trying to build my muscles and everything, but he really showed me that it's not, you know, how strong I can be, but it's the love that I can show to other people. you know, it's not just you know, physical image, but it's how I treat others. So that makes you a man, you know? And yeah, so that's all I really wanted to say. You know, you just taught me that even if I was, you know, a little skinnier, if I was, you know, scrawny, had glasses or bifocals or trifocals, binoculars or contacts, it didn't really matter, you know?
It sounds like that was a lesson that's really stayed with you, William. Thank you so much for calling. And Colm, what do you think about the passing on of so sort of deeper truths from one generation of men to the next? Is that important?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of them can be good and some of them can be bad. Obviously, the caller's, you know, grandfather passed on some sort of deep knowledge. And that was fantastic. And what's interesting to me about what's going on with us is that, you know, some people say, well, it's sentimental to talk about that sort of thing. I don't think it's sentimental to stand up and want a better world, for instance. I think it's full of sentiment, yes, but it's not sentimental. I think there's a big difference between being sentimental and having proper sentiment. And part of the proper sentiment for all of us is decency and, like, looking after one another and, you know, and standing up and saying enough of this bullying, enough of this, you know, pushing around, and give a voice to what was sort of previously voiceless.
All right, Colm, thank you so much for joining us. Interesting conversation.
Thank you so much.
That was Colm McCann. He's author of Transatlantic, curator of the book we've been talking about, The Book of Men, and he's also co-founder of Narrative 4, and I'm interested in some follow-up on that in the future, I think.